coming up on Facts from the Stacks.
Yeah. Like, I got scary watching Spider-Man with the Joker.
Oh, fair.
The Tobey Maguire. Willem Dafoe.
Green Goblin.
Green Goblin. Excuse me. What a faux pas from all these Marvel fans.
Welcome to Facts from the Stacks, a news and trivia podcast for book nerds and library lovers. Facts from the Stacks, created by the staff at the Jackson-Madison County Library, is your library news and book-based trivia podcast. Join your hosts, Kelly and Shane, for what we're reading, what's happening in the library, and tons of trivia. We will have games and quizzes so you can follow along and test your knowledge, but also so we can stump other library staff.
Welcome back, Movie Maniacs.
Hello.
Welcome back to Facts from the Stacks, where we have a special guest for episode 24, Movies. We asked one of our coworkers, who is our movie buff, basically, Lantonio.
Hello, long time listener, first time participator of podcast.
Yeah. Woo. He is one of the people who listens to every episode before it gets posted. So, yeah, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, as per usual, we will start with our recently borrowed.
Woohoo!
As I have talked about the last two whole episodes, I feel like I'm still listening to True Biz. I'm like 10 chapters away from finish. It's got like 80 chapters. So I feel like that's just a couple hours of listening because they're short chapters. Yeah. It's so good.
It's great.
So much happens. And I just love it more and more. So I'm just going to keep recommending it.
Yeah.
And after that, I will start our book talk book, All of Us Villains, which I'm also excited to listen to. Gotcha. So are you still on your Reese's book club kick?
I still am, but I'm currently listening to Becoming by Michelle Obama, which is not a Reese's book club book, but it was just on my winter reading list because it seemed like a good New Year's book.
Okay, that's fair.
So, yeah, just it's fascinating.
Something a little different.
Yeah, just learning about my girl Michelle.
That's fun. Yeah. I mean, everybody, of course, you know, when it came out, we had so many people that were reading it, and we had so many copies at one point.
Really?
So
that makes sense.
Yeah, we really did. So I'm glad that it's good and that it's
it's interesting. And she narrates it, so we love that.
Oh, that's very fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love when the author narrates. What about you? Have you read or borrowed anything recently, Antonio?
I recently read The Fury by Alex Michaelides, I believe that is his name. He's the guy who wrote...
Is that his newest one?
Yes, he wrote The Silent Patient, which was...
Yeah,
I'm starting to really enjoy his book. This is his third book. So it's like a shared universe, but, you know, there's not... It's a little bit all over the place. But anyway, it's a really enjoyable book. I really like the way he writes. And yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
Are they like mystery-ish? Or like what are they?
Thriller, psychological.
Thriller, suspense-y, yeah. Kind of. Okay, that's fun. The Fury?
Yeah, The Fury.
That sounds good. I think I've heard of that one.
Yeah, I've been wanting to read The Silent Patient.
And of course, The Silent Patient.
Yeah, that was a very good book. I read it like a couple years ago.
So, cool. We'll be right back with more Facts from the Stacks.
If you've been listening to us talk about the books we've been reading but don't have the time to come in and check them out, there's a solution for you. The library has online resources so you can check out books without ever leaving home. With Libby and Hoopla, you can access thousands of books, audiobooks, movies, TV shows, and magazines, all in the palm of your hand. Check out the episode's description or check out the library's website, jmclibrary.org, for more information.
Did you know? Did you know? Did you know? All right, you big know-it-all. Did you know?
All right. Well, today, as I said, we're talking about movies. So what I did is I took a couple of... movies that I really enjoy, and I just found some facts about those.
Same.
Yeah. And then, Antonio, you just interject and tell us about any fun movie stuff that you think of while we're talking. one of my two movies that I chose. I can't say like it's, ooh, it's a favorite because I've only seen it the one time. And it feels, it's funny because it's a movie that I know I would have loved had I watched it a long time ago, but I only recently watched The Devil Wears Prada.
You only recently watched that?
Oh, within the last year. Yeah.
Wow, that was like a chapter of my youth.
Yeah, I'm pretty obsessed.
Yeah.
It's such a good movie. We really went on a Meryl Streep journey.
Oh, I love that.
Where we watched Julie and Julia, great, and we watched Devil Wears Prada. Mm-hmm. We watched Death Becomes Her.
I've not seen that.
Oh, it's also good. Mm. So we went on this Meryl Streep journey. So I feel like that's why this one stuck out to me. So
click.
When I was looking through random little movie facts, this one popped up and I was like, oh yeah, I need to talk about The Devil Wears Prada. That's very important to me.
When I was in high school, that scene where she is like getting Starbucks and then she crosses the busy city street with the taxis, that was like my vision for what I wanted my future to be. Like, that was like, I want to be that scene when I grow up. And now that I'm grown up, I want to stay home and have 12 children and churn my own butter.
You know?
So things have changed.
Things have changed. And there's nothing wrong with that.
A slight departure.
It's a little departure, yeah.
But yeah, it's Anne Hathaway is really good in there too. So
she is.
She's one of my favorite actresses.
Oh, that's
remember
fair.
That period of time where she was like the most hated woman ever.
And she was trying to get off her Disney like
Princess Diaries.
Yeah,
speaking of iconic films.
Yes. Princess Diaries.
Yeah,
yeah. It's another.
But yeah, it was like one of those random, you know, where you hear like, oh, blank, everybody hates that person. And you're like, why? That doesn't make any sense.
I have a friend that just doesn't like Anne Hathaway. I was like, why do you not like Anne Hathaway? She has no reason. She just does not.
I just hate her.
That's interesting.
Just don't like her.
I don't understand. I feel like I've heard this, though.
Yeah, it's like a thing.
It's a thing.
I just don't get it.
Maybe it's just maybe at one point it was trendy to not like her for some reason because she was in so many movies.
Oh yeah, she really did.
And she's so iconic. And I know that it's a garbage. No, wrong movie. Never mind. Cut. I did the thing.
Wait, who did you confuse her with?
I don't even know. My brain made a connection that wasn't there, but it's fine. No, my brain made a connection to Catwoman because she is Catwoman, but not
that Catwoman.
That Catwoman. Yeah. So it's fine.
I mean, hers was a
because there was Halle Berry Catwoman.
I was going to say, I thought that was Halle Berry.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And then I was like, wait, no, she was Catwoman in a different universe.
She's only technically, but like, if we were tearing Catwoman, Zoe Kravitz is up there just because
there was a lot of
personality in there. And then Michelle.
I feel like she gives the essence. I don't even know anything about Catwoman, but her being Catwoman makes sense.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
It just makes sense.
We're just quick tier list. I put Zoe Kravitz in the A list. But yeah. Anne Hathaway is probably like second to last Catwoman.
Look, she's not a great Catwoman, but she's great in everything else.
She's a great princess.
It just wasn't a great movie, and I really kind of.
So in Devil Wears Prada, when they were casting for that movie, she fought hard for the role of Andy.
Really?
They turned her down several times.
Wow.
Because they didn't think that she had the right, like, I don't know, they just didn't think that she fit the role well. And so they turned her down several times and they went through nine other, she was the ninth option.
Ooh,
that's so like she was way down the list, which is surprising because she does so well as Andy.
Yes.
But apparently after I can't remember what movie it was that she was in, but Meryl Streep saw her in a movie and was like, this girl should be in this movie. And so then Meryl Streep started to advocate for Anne Hathaway to be Andy.
I wish Meryl Streep would advocate for me.
You know, one
for sure.
Once the Streep has advocated for you, it's pretty much guaranteed.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So apparently when she was, everything was set, like all the contracts were set, they hired, you know, Hathaway and Streep. Meryl Streep said to Anne Hathaway, I think you're perfect for this role. I'm so happy we're going to be working together. And that's the last nice thing I will say to you. And it was.
Oh, gosh.
Because Meryl Streep is such a method actor.
Oh, she is. Okay.
She was She was in character, Miranda Priestley.
Oh, interesting.
To everyone
on set.
I
didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, that's a thing that she does. Oh. So, and it was the last nice thing she ever said during the filming.
At least she, like, set up expectations. Like, she didn't just come out of nowhere being like,
and that's all. Woman. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. What you just said, like, is even more surprising about how she wasn't the original choice.
Uh-huh.
Because you know what just occurred to me is, like, The Devil Wears Prada is literally the same role as Princess Diaries.
It is. It's a Cinderella story.
Yes. Like, she is the perfect actress to play someone who starts out frumpy and then becomes glamorous.
Correct.
Like, they're the same role.
That
How
is
did
correct.
I never put that together until this very moment?
Yeah.
I was 10 years old.
Yeah. She plays, apparently there's 4 movies that she plays the Cinderella.
Ah.
So both of the Princess Diaries, and then there was one other one that I can't remember.
Let's talk about another iconic Anne Hathaway movie, Ella Enchanted.
Oh, that's the other one.
I love that movie.
Yeah, I have never watched that movie.
Okay, it's hilarious. Also, just a great JFic book.
Because, like, that's the one where she has to do whatever people tell her to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great movie. Wow.
I need to watch that. She's magically bound to have to do what people say.
It was Yes Men before Yes Men.
Yeah.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah. I've always heard good stuff
y'all
about
it.
Wow,
you need to watch that. It's a great flick.
Yeah. So, The Devil Wears Prada has the highest overall costuming budget of any movie in history.
Really?
At $1 million for the total costuming budget.
How interesting.
But the question is, did it take the Oscars?
Yeah, did it win the costume design Oscar?
Because why would you?
I'm willing to bet. I feel like I've actually heard some controversy about this because I don't think it did.
Interesting.
Because they didn't make the pieces.
Oh, they were like designer.
They were designer pieces. Yeah. So it's funny. My partner and I were watching. There's like, he watches so many video essays on YouTube. And one of them was about the fashion from The Devil Wears Prada.
Ooh, I'd love to watch that.
And so they talked about how there was a big controversy about, like, it deserved to win because it was so well costumed.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
But because there was another piece maybe during that same Oscar year that was like a period piece where they had to make something.
If you're competing with a period piece, I feel like you're screwed.
Yeah.
Like, if a Jane Austen movie is coming out in your same Oscar season, that's no fair.
Yeah.
What year was that? 2005?
That sounds right to me.
Kelly's like, it's part of my childhood. And I was like,
2006.
Oh, man.
It was 2006.
How dare I?
So, yeah. So they kind of got beat out. And part of it was, you know, part of the defense, I guess, was, well, they didn't make the pieces.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But still, they put a lot of effort into it. And you can tell they did.
Yeah.
But
Stanley Tucci. Love him.
Yeah, I also loved it. And him and Meryl Streep together.
Oh, yeah.
In that and also in Julie and Julia.
Yes.
Are so good. I love them so much.
Yeah.
So the movie was filmed in 57 days.
Wow.
And the final cut was made in 3 weeks.
Wow.
So it was a pretty quick production, like, turnaround.
Yeah.
Miranda Priestly, Meryl Streep's character, is based off of an actual editor of Vogue magazine.
I've heard
Anna Wintour.
Yes.
They had an insider at Vogue tell them exactly what her offices looked like.
Oh.
And it was so accurate that after the movie came out, Anna Wintour redecorated her entire office.
Have to. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Like, and apparently they tried really hard not to step on people's toes. But when you are effectively being, Miranda Priestly is not a good person.
No.
And, like, how do you not offend somebody by being like, you're a stuck up B word, you know? Like, it's a little crazy.
Yeah, that's funny.
But
I think it was a book.
It was a book.
Yeah, I read it. I remember reading it, like, in the sixth grade, which I was far too young to read that book.
Oh,
but I was
obsessed
with the movie, so I was like, oh, I've got to read the book. And
yeah.
But the author, it was, like, based on her experience, is that right?
It was based on, she got information from
or from a friend or something.
She worked, I can't remember exactly what when I was reading through, it said that the character of Emily, played by Emily Blunt, was based on Anna Wintour's actual assistant, and she worked there the same time that the author worked there.
Okay, okay.
So yes, she did have some firsthand experience.
Interesting. Yeah, another great actress in that.
Uh-huh.
Also, like, very beginnings of Emily Blunt.
Yes. They found her on the street. She had been auditioning for other things, and she was, like, in the parking lot. And they were like, come in and audition for this movie we're doing.
How wonderful.
And she auditioned in, like, jeans and flip-flops.
I love that for her. Also, that's probably a miracle, because what if, like, if that didn't happen, she probably wouldn't have married John Krasinski.
Can you imagine?
And what a tragedy that would be.
What a tragedy.
Emily Blunt used to date Michael Bublé, and then she married John Krasinski, so she's effectively my hero. Because what a dating history.
That's pretty great.
Amazing.
So one other random little fact, Nate, Andy's boyfriend in the movie, the chef.
Oh, from Drive Me Crazy, starring Britney Spears.
Yes. During one of the scenes where, you know, they're in the bar and Andy shows up late to dinner.
Yes.
Because she was working. He's wearing a Alabama Tide shirt.
No way.
Yeah, so he's got
a... He's supposed to be a New York City chef, and they put him in a Roll Tide shirt.
They put him in a Roll Tide shirt.
That's funny.
I thought that was really fun.
Yeah.
And I just thought, for funsies, it would be amusing to recite the sweater monologue.
Please. I would love to hear this.
This stuff. Oh, okay, I see. You think this has nothing to do with you. You go to your closet and you select, I don't know, that lumpy blue sweater, for instance, because you're trying to tell the world that you take yourself too seriously to care about what you put on your back. But what you don't know is that that sweater is not just blue. It's not turquoise. It's not lapis. It's actually cerulean. You're so blithely unaware of the fact that in 2002, Oscar de la Renta did a collection of cerulean gowns. And then I think it was Yves Saint Laurent, wasn't it? Who showed cerulean military jackets. I think we need a jacket here. And then cerulean quickly showed up in the collections of 8 different designers. Then it filtered down through the department stores and trickled onto some tragic casual corner where you, no doubt, fished it out of some clearance bin. However, that blue represents millions of dollars of countless jobs, and it's sort of comical how you think you've made a choice that exempts you from the fashion industry when, in fact, you're wearing a sweater that was selected for you by the people in this room from a pile of stuff.
Scene.
It's such a good scene.
That are like put that monologue next to something like very simple.
Yes,
those are great.
It's such a good monologue. Mm.
And it's a great haircut.
Great haircut that they hated. The directors hated it.
Well, it's like that's kind of funny because it. Like, Anna Wintour has a signature haircut that looks nothing like that.
Yes,
so that's funny.
They didn't like it, and then Meryl Streep was like, "Just wait." And then she showed up and did a scene, and they were like, oh,
yeah, it really
with
fits
the tude. Yeah, with the tude, it really makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, you just got to trust Meryl.
Mm-hmm.
Just let her do her thing.
Yeah. I think she earned this. You can just trust her.
Let her have it. So that's my little bit on The Devil Wears Prada. That was an unrehearsed monologue.
Wow, that was stunning. Yeah. He is open for auditions, folks.
Yes.
Comment
bring him off the street and put him in There Was
Prada. Can you imagine? The next Emily Blunt.
This is my moment.
So, my favorite movie of all time is Some Like It Hot from 1959, starring Marilyn Monroe, Jack Lemmon, and Tony Curtis.
Such a good movie. It's been years since I watched it, but it was so good. I watched it at my film class.
It's a great
movie. Good one.
Directed by Billy Wilder, and it is in black and white, if you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So some fun facts. Speaking of what we just talked about, it did win the Academy Award in 1959 for Best Costume Design.
Oh.
Which, if you've seen it, it has some pretty iconic costumes.
Yeah.
Especially the scene where Marilyn Monroe is singing I Want to Be Loved by You, and she's wearing that beautiful white dress.
Yeah.
That was like an iconic scene, and I found that that dress sold for $4.6 million in 2011.
Oh my gosh.
Making it one of the most expensive costumes ever sold.
Whoa.
Movie costumes.
How about that?
I know. Let's see. It's known for its iconic closing line, nobody's perfect.
Oh my God. Because, oh yeah, I remember now. No spoilers. So,
yeah, it's kind of a spoiler, but if you know,
For a several decades old movie.
Yeah, really. And it's been the number one comedy of all time, voted by the American Film Institute.
It deserves it.
Honestly. And it was shot, a lot of it was shot on location in San Diego at the Hotel Del Coronado, which I have been to. And when I went there as a child and ate lunch there, I met Gina Davis, star of the iconic film Stuart Little.
Best of also, when you come
here. That's who I knew her from. I know I'm like that nine at the Hotel Dill. And
no,
she signed my menu. And yes, she, to me, it was exciting. Yeah, it was exciting because I had just come off the high of Stuart Little.
I love that. See, I know her from Beetlejuice.
I know her from A League of Her Own.
No.
From what?
A League of Their Own.
Oh, yeah. Fair.
Yeah, those are all good. That's probably more what she's talking
about. Also, Samuel Jackson, she played a mom that had amnesia. Long Kiss Goodnight. Oh, one of my favorite movies as a kid, which I shouldn't have probably not been watching.
Mood.
Fair. Very fair. Wow. Yeah. That's something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great movie. If you have not seen that, you should.
It's so funny.
It's a classic. Because they join, two men join an all-woman band.
Yeah, they're like, so basically it's these two musicians and something happens at the beginning of the movie. So they're on the run from the mob.
Yeah,
and so they join an all-women's band. And so they dress in drag for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And then, of course, one of them falls in love with Marilyn Monroe because duh.
Because of course.
And so chaos ensues.
It's so good. And Marilyn is so good in it.
She's great. A lot of the articles I was reading were talking about, so like, you know, she died in 1962 and this came out in 1959. So obviously at this point she was like pretty bad off.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of stories about how like she had to do like, you know, tens of takes for like really simple lines. And like the director had to write her lines on the whiteboard behind, or the blackboard, because it was the 50s.
Yeah. Behind,
and like had her lines like in little drawers on the sets. And there was this one part that I read when she's on the phone with Tony Curtis and he's saying goodbye to her. Like right at the end of the movie, you can see her eyes like going back and forth, like she's reading the lines. Yeah, I just watched it back on YouTube, and you totally can tell.
That's about to ask: have you watched it since you're an adult, and did you notice that?
No, I mean, I just learned that today. I mean, obviously, I know like some history of Marilyn Monroe, but I have never really like watched it in the context of like thinking about her having a problem.
No, you don't really notice that she's having a struggle.
Yeah.
Like, that's, she eventually got the takes.
Yeah, she always got the take. It just took forever, and she was, I think, difficult to work with because she was so, like, anxious and addicted. So,
interesting.
Yeah. R.I.P.
Queen. Wow.
I thought it was fun that we're recording this today because the Oscars were a couple days ago.
Yes, they were.
By the time this comes out, it'll be a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But, little connection. Uh-huh. So, Tony Curtis is the father of the iconic Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yes.
And at the Oscars, she presented the, like, I think Best Supporting Actress Oscar, and then promptly left the Oscars early and got in and out and posted it on Instagram. Because she's a queen.
I love Jamie Lee Curtis.
Me too.
She is a much. Queen. There was a span of time where she kind of just, she was just the
mom.
She was the yogurt. Well, she was the.
Oh, the Activia. This is later, yeah.
She was the Activia lady. And yes. She kind of lost me during that.
Yeah. But she's back, baby.
But like, she came. It's like, it was like right after Freaky Friday. I feel like.
I loved Freaky Friday.
Freaky Friday.
I was the biggest Lindsay Lohan fan you ever knew. Let me tell you what.
I look like the Crypt Keeper.
I love that. I've seen that movie 1,000 times.
It's such a good movie.
Yes.
But then she became the Activia lady.
Yeah.
And then when she did Scream Queens, the show Scream Queens.
I loved that show.
It is such a funny show. Mm-hmm. And I was like, the girl is back.
Yeah. She, and now in her back. Halloween resurgence era, she's really thriving.
She's great. I love her. And she just does not care.
I don't think she
I mean,
does.
She left the Oscars early and went to get in and out.
Yeah, like, she was like, bye.
She said, I've done my piece. Bye.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Also, so her mom, Janet Lee, went to the same college that I did.
Oh.
The University of the Pacific in Stockton, California.
Wow.
So the movie theater on campus is called the Janet Lee Theater. And it's my dream someday to own that theater. As like a benefactor. But anyway, so I think Jamie Lee went to my school for a little bit before she, you know, got famous.
Wow.
And fun fact, my friend in college, her dad went there too. And Jamie Lee Curtis made out with one of her dad's friends at a party. So...
Small world.
Yeah.
6 degrees of separation.
Exactly. Yeah.
That is so funny.
We're learning so much about Kelly's dreams in this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly. Wow. Movies are a big part of my person.
Speaking of, I mean, you were a film major.
Yeah. My major in college was film studies.
And so your degree, you graduated as a film major.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wild.
Yeah.
Facts from the Stacks. We'll be right back.
If you've ever wanted to learn a new language, but you've never found a group to learn with, the library may be the place to go. Every Tuesday at 11, you can learn American Sign Language with an interpreter from the Jackson Center for Independent Living. Whether you know tons of signs, just your alphabet, or none at all, come learn about how awesome ASL is with us.
Now I get to talk about one of my actual, like, seriously favorite movies of mine since I was a child. 1999's The Mummy. The Mummy, starring Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz. Yes.
How long is this podcast? Because we can talk about this for a while.
I could talk about The Mummy for a long time.
I still need to watch this movie. I'm sorry. Okay. Especially as, like, a librarian. Yes. Or an aspiring librarian. That's an iconic librarian movie.
Yes, and it's because Evelyn O'Connell is, she wasn't O'Connell in that one. She was...
Oh, we had this thing.
We had this discussion.
Oh, because does he...
Carnahan.
Yeah.
Oh, did she, like, marry him eventually?
She married him. Yeah. Spoilers.
Spoiler.
She marries Brendan Fraser.
Also, TBT to when Brendan Fraser was, like, just everywhere.
Yes. So...
Speaking of Jamie Lee being everywhere.
Yes. So, Brendan Fraser was, again, was not the first pick that they had for Rick. They wanted Tom Cruise, Ben Affleck, or Brad Pitt.
The 2000s, you know, or the late 90s. They'll get you.
But they thought it would be more, it would be more budget friendly to find someone who was, like, an up and coming person. And he had just come off of George of the Jungle.
Come on.
Yeah.
What a flick.
Yes. So, I also remember liking that one.
Oh, I loved it.
When I was younger, I've not watched it since I was a child. But, yeah, The Mummy was it. So they hired him. The movie was shot in North Africa, but not in Egypt itself.
Huh.
And sandstorms interrupted the filming almost daily.
Wow.
So it's interesting. I don't know. It's so crazy to me that they filmed, like, in a desert. Like, they actually filmed in a desert.
That's impressive.
Which, you know, it's really important that they did, because I feel like all of those scenes, you're like, wow, this really feels like Egypt, because it's not far off.
Yeah. Adjacent.
It's adjacent.
It's pretty on the cusp before they started using CGI to replace backgrounds.
Yeah.
They're still doing the movie tricks and stuff like that. So
that's true.
That's what I love about the 90s movies, is they still have, like, legit locations.
Practical effects.
Yeah.
And filming on location and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the director took out insurance policies on all of the main cast in case they were injured or in case they wandered into hostile lands and were kidnapped by terrorists.
Oh my gosh.
No.
He did not tell any of them this until after filming was wrapped, as one does.
Yes.
So Brendan Fraser almost died while filming.
Oh.
There is a scene in the very beginning where he is caught and he is going to be hung. And they hang him. And he lost footing on the thing that he was standing on and got choked out.
Oh, God.
And he had to be...
Did he, like, lose consciousness?
Yeah, he had to be resuscitated.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Practical?
Like, he almost died. He did his own stunts. So that is him in George of the Jungle as well.
You go.
Swinging around.
Come on, Brendan.
but, yeah, so he almost died.
Wow.
I'm glad he did not. He is one of my favorites.
Didn't you tell me something about him nowadays, like something tragic?
Oh, yeah. So he had I don't know all of the details, but he kind of effectively got blackmailed into shamed into not doing movies anymore because he was harassed. Ooh. Like, he was sexually assaulted.
Oh, and so he got, like, silence.
And so he was so ashamed of that he kind of just fell off the radar.
Yeah.
And so recently he's come back into doing TV. He did what is it called? It's a DC show.
Oh,
is it Titans?
No, it's
not Titans. What is it?
It's the It came out the same time as
Fantastic Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol. Thank
Doom
you.
Patrol. But he plays a character that's like a big metal man, basically. So you don't get to see him.
But he did The Whale recently. Yeah. Right?
Oh, and he did that.
Like, such a good comeback. Movie.
I didn't see it, but that was like a big comeback, right?
It was originally a play and it got rewrote into a movie. And it basically takes place in his room. And it's right. A guy who is severely, I guess you would say, technical terms, morbidly a beast. But he teaches through like Zoom.
Oh.
And so that's how he makes his living. But
He just never leaves his room.
He never leaves the And wow. It's interesting. You know, it is really a good movie though.
Interesting. I'm glad he's back and thriving.
Yeah, I saw. I was, you know, looking through the red carpet looks as one does, and he was there.
So he was at the Oscars. Oh, mm-hmm. Good. Because, you know, when you have an actor or actress you're really, like, attached to.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, something horrible happened to you.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's such a bummer.
He really didn't
You're
disappear.
Like, I want you to do good.
See, like, had the Mummy 3, which...
He hurt himself. That's the problem, is that another part of him disappearing is that he badly injured himself doing the Mummy movies.
Oh, interesting.
Because, again, he was doing all of his own stunts, and he ended up, like... hurting himself and not being able to do action-y movies anymore on top of all the other stuff.
Did the abuse happen like after the Mummy?
I think so. I don't know the full story on
that. Yeah, I actually didn't know that at all. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He finally came up and spoke out about it, I believe, in the last few years.
He's not the first. Terry Crews has actually had some issues too.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Being sexual harassed.
Yeah, I have heard about that. But so The Mummy started as a $10 million budget movie. So it's not a very big budget for a Hollywood movie. And it's based on the old Universal Pictures movies, The Mummy and The Invisible Man and The Wolf Man and like those. So it was a remake of The Mummy from like the 60s or something, maybe. Okay. Maybe even the 30s.
Yeah, I was like, oh, follow
30s. I thought there was another remake, or they attempted to do something.
Oh,
like
yeah, there's
the
definitely
60s.
Been multiple of most of those.
That's
monsters.
So interesting, because I never saw it, and I think I never saw it because I was like I was too young to at the time, and then I never got around to it. So all I remember of it living in California was like the big Mummy ride at Universal Studios.
Yeah.
And so that makes so much sense. It's all, you know,
it's all connected. And then, so, you know, it was a $10 million movie, but it quickly grew into having an $80 million budget.
Wow.
With $15 million of that alone being in CGI effects, which it looks horrible now.
Yeah, it's dated.
Oh, no.
It's dated, but like at the time it was pretty interesting, but it was a big risk for them because it was also released at the same time as Revenge of the Sith, I believe it was.
Ooh, that is...
Revenge of the Sith? It was one of the... Maybe it was Phantom Menace.
Are you talking about the original movie? It would have been Phantom Menace.
No, Phantom Menace then.
Yeah.
So it was Phantom Menace. They had to push the release date back 2 weeks, but then it managed to earn $416 million.
That's impressive.
So it still did well. Mm-hmm. And then they tried to do another reboot in 2017, 2018 with Tom Cruise.
No, don't talk about
and
this.
It's bad.
Of movies?
So bad.
Yeah, of The Mummy.
I actually love Tom Cruise.
It was really bad.
Like, that's mean to Brendan Fraser.
It is interesting, though, that Tom Cruise is who they wanted to play Rick. Yeah. And then in this new reboot, they got Tom Cruise. It was a garbage.
Yeah, this was actually them trying to start a monster universe again. Because originally it was supposed to be Dracula Untold that started this whole adventure.
Oh.
And then there was like Javier Bardem was going to be playing Invisible Man. Tom Cruise was going to be the Mummy. But we all thought Tom Cruise would be the Mummy, but he's not the Mummy.
Oh, the literal Mummy.
Yeah. They made
Brendan Fraser's not a literal Mummy.
No.
He's like an explorer.
He's an archaeologist. Well, not he's a mercenary, but he becomes an archaeologist.
Like,
after meeting his soon-to-be librarian wife,
aka partner in crime.
Yeah,
love that.
They are goals. I love them so much.
Yeah.
So
maybe I can convince my husband to become a mercenary instead of an assistant principal.
Yeah, maybe so.
When I get my degree,
maybe so. Become an archaeologist / mercenary.
Yeah. Yes. You got to keep the assistant principal because you got to. The legit job.
Oh, that's his cover. Like Indiana freaking Jones.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
This belongs in a museum.
This just blew up.
Yep.
Wow.
So that's what I've got about The Mummy.
that.
Classic.
That was great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one of my other top favorite movies of all time is Toy Story 3. Oh. Really all the Toy Stories, but I do love Toy Story 3.
Okay.
From 2010, directed by Lee Unkrich. I don't want to say that. Okay, some fun things that I found. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Disney got sued by a company called Dice Lisa for Lotso Huggin' Bear because they had the trademark of lots of hugs, TM, of like a very similar toy, I think.
Oh my God.
So they got sued over that. I thought that was kind of funny. Because someone else pointed out in this article, like, I guess the original iterations of him were more like a Care Bear vibe. Oh. So it's funny that, like, they ended up getting sued anyway.
Anyway, yeah.
Like a more obscure bear.
Well, I mean, at some point, like, if Disney steps a toe over into your copyright,
yeah.
People are going to, you know, you're going to sue their pants off if you can try. Oh, yeah, why not?
They totally
They got enough to. Money.
Yeah. Okay, so some of these you might have heard before, but anyway. So the same actor voiced Andy, and they had to, like, track him down.
Oh.
Because he had, like, stopped acting in, like, 2001, I think. And so they had to find him again.
Whoa.
And be like, hello, will you be in this movie?
Oh, please be in this movie.
Yeah. So that's cool.
Whoa.
For continuity. And then Totoro makes a cameo.
He does.
Yeah.
I feel like I remember that.
Okay, and so the reason is because John Lasseter, who was like the head honcho of Pixar back in the day before he got canceled, is really good friends with
Hayao Miyazaki.
That's how you say that.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So and Disney is the one that releases the dubbed, you know, DVDs at the time and now streaming of his movies. So it was like a little homage to that partnership.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. And a lot of the movie was inspired by prison movies like Cool Hand Luke, The Great Escape, and Shawshank Redemption. Like, when you think about them, like, breaking out of the daycare.
You're absolutely correct.
So they, like, legitimately studied those movies, and there's references to them in the film, but I just never thought about that.
No, I didn't
like,
either.
Like, Toy Story 3 is, like, low-key a prison
movie. Like a prison movie. That's crazy.
Toy Story 3, Prison Break.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally. And another cameo is towards the end, the garbage man is Sid, all grown up.
And
he's wearing his same shirt.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Trixie, the Triceratops, she's supposed to be from the, like, imagined to be from the same line of toys as Rex. So that's why their eyes are so similar and, like, why they get along. They're supposed to be from the same line, which I thought was cute.
That's cute.
And then another thing I found was when they capture Buzz and try to reset him, his batteries are the brand By and Large, which is the corporation in WALL-E.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh,
so that's a funny Easter egg.
The connection.
Yeah.
I love Easter eggs in
Me
movies
too.
Like that. Like,
speaking, that'll have already happened when this podcast comes out. The Easter egg program.
That's true.
Yeah, but I feel like, especially in early YouTube days, that was like half of my life was like looking up Easter eggs on YouTube.
Can we talk about for just a moment?
Let's.
The trend that I don't think they do much anymore, but the trend of animated movies having blooper reels.
Yes.
That.
I saw a video. Did you show me that?
What?
I saw like a reel the other day that was like, remember when the credits of Pixar movies used to just be blooper reels? Good time.
No, those were great.
Okay, my sister and I quote this. I believe she listens to this podcast. Hello, Chelsea. Shout out. we quote all the time the very end of the Toy Story 2 credits when Barbie's like, are we done?
Are we done?
Are they gone?
My cheeks are smiling. Yeah. Yes.
That but yeah, why so is that funny? Not a trend anymore? That was so good. That's hilarious.
Those were so good.
Technically, that costs money.
Yeah. If you think about how much work they had to do for that, that's wild.
Yeah.
That's what you love about, especially early Pixar, though, is a lot of it was just for the love of the game, man.
Yeah,
it wasn't
true.
About profits. It was like, we're doing this for the love of art.
Yeah.
And then we spent all this time and money on literal cartoon bloopers.
And then we have so cool. Toy Story 4.
Yeah. Toy Story 4 was... It wasn't as bad as I expected it to be.
I still haven't watched it.
It wasn't necessary for sure, but I expected it to be worse than it was.
Hot take.
Okay, good to know.
I haven't watched any Toy Stories past 2.
That's okay. I respect that.
I mean, you're a little outside of the age bracket at that point. When 3 came out.
I was a grown man.
Yeah, like those movies were literally designed for me because they came out, Toy Story came out the year I was born.
Yeah.
So Toy Story 3 was about going off to college, and like that's when I was going off to college. Right. It like matched up, synced with my life.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's very interesting.
You were the target audience.
You were the perfect target audience. Yeah.
Toy Story 3 was made for me.
Wow.
Dedication, Kelly.
Yes.
Good luck in college.
The only other facts I have, or a couple of little facts from, I'm big on horror movies. I love horror movies. Which is funny considering, I mean, The Mummy is kind of a horror movie, but it doesn't feel like a horror movie anymore. Actually,
adventure horror.
Adventure horror.
See, I think at the time, you know, because 1999, I was 4.
Yeah, it would have been scary to
you. Yeah, it was in my mind. It was one of those that even though it wasn't necessarily a horror movie, like, oh, that's too scary. I'm not going to watch
it. It's a little spooky.
Yeah. Like, I got scary watching Spider-Man with the Joker.
Oh, fair.
The Tobey Maguire. Willem Dafoe.
Green Goblin.
Green Goblin. Excuse me. What a faux pas from all these Marvel fans.
I was like, whoa, you lost me here,
excuse
Joker.
Excuse me, I did not mean to do that.
Yeah. Is it the scene that Aunt May is like in her room praying or something? He just busts through the window and the camera is shaking.
Yeah, I just vividly remember watching that at my house. Like, you know, back when you would rent a DVD and watch it with your family.
Yep.
And then I like couldn't sleep at night.
Wow.
Yeah. That's fair. It was scary.
So, yeah, just a couple little horror movie facts. Candyman. So there's a scene where the Candyman, played by Tony Todd, is covered in bees. Like, that's a big, like, bees are a big thing for Candyman. That's, like, just
that was part of his
manifestation.
It was part of his torture when he was killed.
Correct. But all of the bees on the actor were real.
Oh, gosh.
Including the ones that are coming out of his mouth in that scene. They put a dental dam in his mouth so they wouldn't go in his throat.
Oh,
but they were all real bees. And so he got stung like 27 times.
Wow.
And before that scene was shot, he made them negotiate to give him $1,000 for every sting he had.
What a king.
Great way to do that.
Yeah, what a great guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Was this like movie made before the whole Save the Bees movement? Because I can't imagine that going
probably.
Off.
Probably that movie was made.
I'm pretty sure they had a sea wrangler though.
Like. Yeah, but you remember like when the Save the Bees got really big? I can't imagine you making a movie and using bees.
That was in the 80s, early 80s,
early 90s. I mean, late 80s, early 90s.
Something like that. And then in Scream, the original Scream, starring. The opening scene starring Drew Barrymore.
Yes.
Her first role, was not her first role?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
She was
still a little kid?
No, she's a girl.
She was a teen. Oh, that's right. She had kid roles.
She was an E.T.
That's right.
Somewhat known at this point. She was the most known person at the moment doing that movie.
Was she?
Yeah, she was on the she's on the cover. That's her face.
I guess that's true. It's just she's gone so quickly.
She was the draw. And it was
and then they kill her 5 minutes in.
Yeah, it was the Alfred Hitchcock kind of thing where you follow Janet Leigh's character and you think she's the main character and then she dies halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that. And she wanted that to
wanted that to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So during that opening scene, you know, she gets a phone call, she answers it. And they're like, it's this guy that's like, what's your favorite scary movie? Like, whatever. They're going back and forth. And she ends up calling 911. She's like, someone's stalking me, whatever. During that scene, the prop master forgot to disconnect the phone. So she actually multiple times called 911 and was screaming about someone going to stab her and being murdered and all this stuff. And they didn't realize it until 911 called the number back in the middle of one of their takes.
Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine?
What?
Just in the middle of the thing, 911 calls and like, wait.
This is not supposed to be ringing.
Yeah.
That's
like, funny.
Oh no, everything's fine. We're filming a movie down here. Like,
I wonder how often that happens in Hollywood.
I don't know. I can't imagine.
Like, what kind of calls does the Hollywood precinct begin?
But also, why did the phone ever need to be connected to begin with?
Yeah, that's true. Like,
also, why are you actually dialing 911? Was the camera on her hand?
She's an actress.
She's an actress. But why was there a phone line?
Yeah, that's a good good question.
On that like, set to that phone.
Like, wouldn't most things be prop phones?
Just, you know, when you actually need to make an order for food or something.
Yeah. Sure, sure.
So all the Scream movies are like spoofs, right?
Not the meta.
They're very meta.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not spoofs, but like, are they all like that where they're kind of like making...
They're all very meta.
Meta, okay.
So like all of in Scream 1 and running through the next two of them, there's a guy who's like, here's the rules of what not to do in a horror movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, basically. Yeah.
Never so they're say very meta. That you're going to be right back.
They're right. Exactly. Mm. Yeah. So that's just a couple little horror movie facts. Since
that was fun.
My horror movies are...
Save the bees.
You know, save the bees. Our final facts and quiz segment will be right back after this break. If you're the creative type and enjoy storytelling and writing, come to the Jackson Writers Guild right here at your local library. Every second and fourth Thursday at 5:30, meet with like-minded writers who write in every genre you can imagine. Learn important parts of the writing process from conception to publishing and participate in activities that will encourage you to be confident in sharing your work. Whether you've been writing for years or you're just starting, or whether you've published before or you're just writing for yourself, all experience levels are welcome.
The fact that in Die Hard, when Alan Rickman is falling off the building, they like actually, like, you know, he did that stunt, and so they were like 3, 2, 1, but they like dropped him on 2 so that his reaction was genuine.
Was genuine. Yes.
Yeah. That was his real face. Also, Die Hard is one of my favorite movies. So,
Other reactions that are genuine.
Oh, yes.
Diving a little more into TV, which we'll also do with the quiz a little bit.
We love TV.
Parks and Rec. The scene scene where Andy knocks on Leslie's door and he's totally naked and she opens it. That is a genuine reaction.
Because he was actually naked.
Because that's he was so actually funny. Naked. And so the look on Amy Poehler's face is legitimate.
It's hilarious.
The fact that she was able to...
Like, she still carried out the scene.
Yeah, she still did the whole scene, but, like, that is so ridiculous. She's a professional. She's a professional woman.
I have one. Alien. The chest burster scene. It was...
They didn't know that was going to happen?
They didn't know it was going to happen the way it happened.
Yeah.
Because they were, like... So he does the scene, and then all of a sudden, the packs of whatever liquid that they considered blood back then...
Yeah,
you know, pop, blood. It gets on them. They're like, oh... my God. So they knew it was going to happen, but they didn't know how it was going to happen. So those reactions are pretty spot on. Because they're like, oh.
That's terrifying.
Yes.
Wow. Whoa. That's amazing. I love when people do stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the actors don't love it.
I'm sure they don't, depending on the situation.
Yeah.
The Shining is notorious for abusing, what was her name?
Oh.
That played Danny's mom.
I don't remember.
She had to do take after take because I can't even remember the director's name. That's fun.
Stanley Kubrick?
Yes. He was known for doing like 30, 40, 60 takes to get exactly what he wanted. And Shelley Duvall, that's her name.
That's right.
She was notoriously like tortured on, not tortured, but like at the point because she had to keep doing the takes. And they were like, you got to do this. You got to do this. And it's crazy.
She got her head about it.
Yeah. You don't do that stuff anymore.
I saw about Toy Story 2 is like, I guess there's a bunch of Shining references all throughout Toy Story. I guess the filmmakers loved it. And so one of them in Toy Story 3 was the license plate on Sid's garbage truck is the same room number as the room where he finds the rotting lady in the bathtub.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So that's another fact that I kind of like came across when I was flipping through facts is that they went through when they were filming The Shining, they went through 60 doors during the scene with the axe. Here's Johnny.
Oh, yeah.
They did that scene over 60 times.
How interesting.
So like that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
And I believe they talked about this and I might be just making this up. It's completely possible that in The Shining, the hotel outline doesn't make sense. Like literally it shows you the hotel from the outside and what you see in the inside literally doesn't make any structural sense. And I think Stanley Kubrick, Mr. Kubrick. I don't know him personally.
Mr. Kubrick.
My guy Stan.
My man Stan.
I think he did that on purpose, saying that like the hotel is considered to be an entity. So
right.
Oh, so it changes.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh. I do love it when people like do memes like that of like doing a layout of what a show or a movie is gonna like is totally illogical. That is funny.
I also like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that makes sense for like story reasons. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. I don't know. I have so many movies that I just love so much.
Yes. These conversations make me crave. Like, I want to go watch like 20 different movies right
yes,
now.
Yes, I do too.
Watch Some Like It Hot because I've heard it before and now I just want to watch.
It's so good.
If you haven't really gotten into your classic film era, I highly recommend. It's a real fun time.
It really truly is. It is.
North by Northwest is one of my fun movies. The movie about... she's a librarian. See, this is my brain stuff. It's not happening. The librarian's in, like, 1950s, and this is right before computers
get into it.
I do love that movie. I've read the book and watched the movie. But, yeah, it was just right before computers were at it. But it's not – it's somebody's name who's similar to another name, and I got, like, similar last names, but they're not related. Unfortunately, my memory's not going to work today.
But what happens in the movie?
Well, she – I mean, like, it appealed to me because Evelyn had – suggested it, so I decided to watch it in a library, loaned it, doing all the things you do at your local library. And I watched it, and I just really had a good time. And it was like from 1950. I think it was in black and white. It might have been in color, like Technicolor back then.
Yeah,
but yeah. Just go back and watch.
I need to watch any 1950s movie with librarian.
I need to break my. I have a bad habit of like not wanting to watch classic movies, like anything. Anything like pre-90s, really, like, I'm like, do I really want to watch it?
Yeah.
I need to break myself of that habit.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people are like that. Like, if it's in black and white, they're not interested. But once you break that and you start watching them, they're so good.
Yeah, it's true. Well, so for the quiz, I have some general movie, like, the industry of movies and television to ask. Just, and some of these may be kind of obvious, but I think some of them will be just enough of a twist. So, question number one, what is the longest running television series of all time?
The Simpsons.
Yeah. That one's pretty easy. 700 episodes. That's a pretty easy one.
Are we still going?
Yes. Okay. Yes, they are. What is the highest grossing movie of all time?
Titanic.
Didn't something beat Titanic? Was it Avatar?
It was Avatar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So now the new list is Avatar, Avengers Endgame, Avatar 2, and then Titanic.
I still need to watch Avatar 2.
Correct. It's fine.
But it's so long. That's why I keep hesitating.
It's so long. But that being said, of those top four, three of those are James Cameron.
Yeah, what a guy.
You know?
He doesn't just James Patterson his stuff where he just puts out movie after movie. He like spins.
There's two kinds of Jameses.
Yeah.
He really
could be
is.
A Patterson.
It's like Donna Finch, you know? Yeah. She releases a book like every decade, but it's a hit.
You can be a Patterson.
Or Donna Tart. Not
Donna Tart.
Author of The Goldfinch.
Yes. You can be a Patterson.
Or a Cameron.
You can be a Cameron.
Or Titanic. Another great movie.
I kind of hate that I didn't talk about that because that is my
partner's. You do love the Titanic.
It is my partner's favorite movie.
Okay. I can talk about that movie. I've seen it a few times.
So the highest budget, the movie with the highest budget of all time.
Budget.
Highest budget.
Which, is it within this decade?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a Marvel movie?
Mm-mm.
I feel like I know what it is.
It is not Avatar.
Highest budget.
It is from a very popular franchise.
Highest budget in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a Star Wars, is it? No, it's not a Star Wars. It is a Star Wars.
It's a Star Wars.
Is it?
It is The Force Awakens.
At
$447 million.
Wow.
Almost $500,000 to make that movie. Or $500 million.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy.
We were just talking about The Mummy, how they barely had $10 million.
Yeah, well, they at the start, they had 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. The highest paying acting gig, like
in history?
Yeah.
Is it The Rock?
For what?
I don't know. I
heard, for playing the Scorpion King and the Mummy Shumanji for 2 seconds.
I thought I saw somewhere that he was like the highest paid actor, but you mean one time?
So like the role.
Like the role. The role that play that has paid the highest.
Is for it an in actor. The last decade?
Not quite.
Is it Arabella?
No, it's oh, not. That's a good guess, though.
Yeah.
That's a really good guess.
Yeah, would that count? So, like, the role, but it spanned a bunch of movies?
I guess technically talking? It could count, yes.
It has to be a franchise role.
Okay.
If it ain't Harry Potter.
Is it Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones?
Mm-mm.
Is it Katniss Everdeen?
No, it is not.
Oh, okay. Good guess.
That's another good guess.
Yeah.
It is Keanu Reeves for The Matrix.
Oh, yeah.
They paid him, so for 2 and 3, they paid him, what was it? Oh my God.
I would have never.
I still have never seen those either.
The first Matrix.
It's a lot of money.
Is my favorite, one of my favorite movies. It's the best Matrix. I honestly just watched the first one, don't worry about the rest of it. But I mean, some people say 2 and maybe 3, but the first one is where it really gets me.
Here we go. So in, for the role of Neo in The Matrix Reloaded and Revolutions, he got $30 million for 2 movies.
Wow.
Which is so crazy.
See, that's like Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible money.
Mm.
Yeah. But I think he puts it back into Mission Impossible so he can do more crazy
things. His total, though, this chart is a little misleading, but the total income that it says he got, there was salary and then an income. Because you get royalties and stuff.
Yeah.
So altogether, he got $156 million for the role of Neo.
Wow. Yeah.
I
wonder what the qualifications to get royalties from a movie is, because you know TV shows, I think it's 5 seasons or something like that. If you get 5 seasons, you get the residuals from.
Oh,
yeah, I don't know. Runs. It's a good question. And then the last question is, what actor or actress has the most lead roles under their belt?
Meryl Streep.
He was thinking Meryl Streep. The street monster.
It's probably not a woman, though, in this industry.
Those eyes say differently. That's why I say it's
Jamie. Or Julia Roberts. No, that's not right. But let's talk about a queen.
We were just talking about her.
Oh, yeah, we were. We were.
God.
Willie was talking about the movie Conspiracy Theory, which I've never seen, but it stars Mel Gibson and Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts.
My Best Friend's Wedding.
Julia Roberts.
The 90s rom-com in general, as a statement.
Erin Brockovich.
I need to watch that.
In the first Ocean's 11 movie?
I think so.
That's where I know her from.
Oh,
I knew Best Friend's Wedding, but
I love that movie.
We watched Erin Brockovich recently. It's so good.
You need to watch that.
Yeah.
Runaway Bride.
Such a good movie. All right, what is your guess? Yeah, is it Streep?
Oh. Mine's Streep. I'm looking in Streep.
Sorry, say the question one more time, please.
The actor or actress with the most leading role, like the most lead roles.
If you just say most roles, I'm going to go Samuel Jackson.
It's not it's not most roles. It's most lead roles.
Leading roles. Ooh. It's not Tom Cruise.
I kind of feel like Tom Cruise in my heart as well.
I feel like how many... I'm trying to think of who has just stuck their face in my face for the last couple of decades. In the movie biz.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to go Tom Cruise.
You had it.
Is it Street Monster?
No.
Oh.
You had it. It was Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh!
Leading roles?
Really? Yeah, lead roles. Yeah, 66 lead roles.
I knew for a fact that at one point, Samuel L. Jackson had the most roles.
It is also the most. It's 142 roles.
The hardest working Hollywood actor.
And that's just movies. That's not television or voice acting. Man, but he has 142 total credits in movies.
And Jackson fans.
Can you tell us your fun personal fact about Samuel L. Jackson for the pod?
So apparently it's funny.
Are you related?
No. My grandfather was named Sammy L. Jackson. Now, Sammy's not short for Samuel.
It was just Sammy.
Yeah, it's just Sammy
but
Lewis
that's
Jackson.
Too gay. Come on.
So, whoa.
That Jackson clan, man. You know?
That is so funny. That was a movies. Fun that episode. Was so fun.
What a great combo.
Yeah, we could definitely do a movies part two one day. There's so many things to talk about. We should.
Also, shameless plug, we just revamped our website, jmclibrary.org. And on the podcast page, there's a form you can fill out to communicate with us.
Yes.
Tell us your favorite movies. Give us suggestions for episodes, etc.
Please. We would love to have that.
Yeah.
We will end our episode here. And you can, again, like Kelly said, go to the website, submit any of your ideas or comments to us, and you can catch us again in 2 weeks for our next episode.
I think we should do it on tea because we did coffee.
Tea. That sounds great. I thought
you meant gossiping tea.
Should we start a gossip podcast?
What is this?
But like based in like library research.
Yeah.
The hot tea the Manhattan Project.
Oh my God. That's so funny.
That'd be fun. An academia tea podcast. Yes. That'd be kind of cool.
Yes.
The beverage.
Yes, the beverage. So we'll do our next episode on tea.
Wee.
We did coffee. We can do tea.
We'll still work.
So we will see you in 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us, Lantonio.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Your expertise was appreciated.
Yes. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.